You're listening to Marketplace Weekend, and maybe you come home from work exhausted and down and say, ugh, my job is killing me. But one professor at Stanford's business school says that's not just a figure of speech. His name is Jeffrey Pfeffer, and he wrote a book about it called Dying for a Paycheck. Thanks for coming on.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
Okay, when you say work is killing us, do you mean like really and truly killing us?
I mean really and truly killing us. Two colleagues in operations research and I estimate about 120,000 deaths in the U.S., and that's probably a conservative estimate, and about $190 billion in excess costs. And that's 120,000 deaths each year.
Yeah, you make the point in the book that this would make workplaces the fifth leading cause of death in the United States. And I guess I wonder, I can absolutely see that when you are talking about work that requires physical labor or potentially dangerous conditions. But, you know, you expand this to white-collar professions as well.
Absolutely. I mean, there's one story in the book is of an Uber engineer who made $170,000 a year who killed himself, and his family attributes that to the workplace. Everybody who's ever worked in investment banking understands, particularly if you're an investment banking intern and they don't let you sleep. I mean, there's this famous case of a Merrill Lynch intern who worked 3 days straight and then wound up dead, even though he was only 23 or 24 years old. One of the stories I tell in the book is of the Palo Alto Medical Foundation, which is a physicians group here that sends mobile vans to high-tech campuses because the engineers on those high-tech campuses believe they don't have time to go to a doctor's office. And the person who runs that van service describes seeing 30-year-old engineers with 50-year-old bodies. So yes, this is a problem that extends across, by the way, across countries. One estimate is that 1 million people a year are dying from overwork in China, and it certainly extends across occupations.
But I guess there's some part of me that says, okay, sure, I work in news, it's a stressful business, but 100 years ago, my options probably would have been, you know, sew in a factory somewhere, maybe be a teacher if I'm lucky, or die in childbirth. Is workplace stress so bad compared to what historical conditions have been? This is not the Industrial Revolution.
Well, if you go back probably, you know, 600 or 700 years, people were dying from the plague. So people were always dying of something. But workplace stress is certainly worse than it was probably several decades ago. And even if you think about, you know, your example of 100 years ago, well, sewing in a factory was probably pretty bad. But if you worked on a farm, you at least had something that many people do not have today, which is control over your job conditions. One of the things that predicts cardiovascular disease and death from heart attack is the absence of job control. So one of the things that has made work stressful is that people increasingly do not have much control over what they do and when they do it. You can work hard, but as long as you have some control over what you do and when you do it and how you do it, that's not nearly as stressful as being micromanaged, something else that I think many people can relate to in today's world.
Why do you think this has gotten worse over the past few decades?
Number one, you know, 40, 50, 60 years ago, when economic times got tough, people got laid off. Now, people are getting laid off regularly and routinely. So that's one source of increasing economic insecurity. Another source of economic insecurity is that we now have these software programs that schedule people. In retailing, they're quite prominent, but in banking and some other industries as well. And so from 1 week to the next, you do not know when you're going to work or how many hours you're going to work. So therefore, you do not know your income, number one. And number two, it's very hard for you to plan for dealing with other family responsibilities when you don't know what your shift is going to be. So that certainly has made life more stressful.
You are talking about some very systemic things and really big picture questions. If you had to start somewhere instituting, you know, the baby step solution, where would you start?
If I were an employer, I would try to do what the good employers are currently doing, which is to say, am I managing my workplace in a way that people at the end of the day leave feeling at least as good, if not better, than when they came to work? Am I taking care of them? Am I providing a workplace that provides them social support? Do I have an environment in which people have friends at work so that they can get the social support which helps them overcome their stress level? Am I offering them benefits? Am I offering them policies that permit them to balance their work and family obligations? I was just with a CEO the other day, and he told a story. A young woman working in their Philadelphia office, her husband, who was also quite young, died unexpectedly. And what did they say to that person? Number one, they were there to provide food and babysitting assistance, which, of course, provides a signal that the organization cares about her. They told her, take as much time off as you need. And by the way, we will pay you for all that time off. You know, they will make sure that there are benefits available to help people deal with their family obligations. So you create a supportive environment in which people feel valued and cared for. It's what organizations used to do, and what a few of them still do, even in today's world.
Jeffrey Pfeffer, professor of organizational behavior at Stanford's Graduate School of Business, thank you so much.
It's a pleasure.